Welcome back to the Radio Academy podcast. I'm your host, Georgie Jameson, and this week my guest is broadcaster and journalist Anushka Mutanda Dawati, who presents the podcasts Diddy on Trial and Fame Under Fire for BBC Sounds. Because the podcasts are following high-profile showbiz trials, there is an element of live reporting in them, and I wanted to find out from Anushka how she balances that. But firstly, I asked her to tell me a bit about her journey into the audio industry and how did it all start. And just a warning, this podcast does contain some strong language.
In a bit of a bizarre way, actually, there's a very talented producer who a lot of people know now called Sue Mitchell, and she was doing a series on Meghan and Harry when everyone was happy about Meghan and Harry. And I was 17 at the time, and she was interviewing like Britain's mixed race views on Meghan and Harry. And she was interviewing my mum, actually, but I just wouldn't shut up in the background. And she just literally said to me, she left me her radio equipment. She left me like the big bulky bags that they used to carry around with the three Marantz and the clip-ons. And she said, make me a program. And I did. And she liked it and it went on air. And then I did about four more with her. And then I applied for the apprenticeship scheme at the BBC, got rejected, but ended up classically doing 2 weeks of research, which then has turned into I'm still here, which is the classic, the motto of the BBC. Once you're in, you'll be there for life.
It's interesting that you applied for the BBC apprenticeship scheme, didn't get it, but persevered, because I think that's really important as well, perseverance in our industry.
Well, I was just of the firm opinion that they were just absolutely wrong. And when you're like 19, 20 years old, you can have those opinions because the world ain't beating that out of you yet.
Was it a journalism or media degree that you would do?
No, I did a history degree, which is actually very helpful because everybody wants to do history podcasts and programs. So I would recommend to anyone studying. History really helps.
Let's talk about Diddy to start off with, because that podcast was huge and you were reporting every day from the trial. So you went over to the States and you were reporting there. I've been listening to some of the episodes and it seems to me, and I think actually you use this expression, it was like a circus outside that court, not just with journalists, but influencers, news influencers, this whole new kind of brand of people who, dare I say, think they're journalists. There were fans as well. How do you deal with that when you're trying to report the facts? Because you're very clear in your podcast, you want to cut through the myths, cut through all the noise and get to the truth.
I definitely wasn't expecting it. And none of us were expecting it either, because we're used to a UK court system where there's ring fencing for credentialed media. And it's just a bun fight in the States. I mean, everybody is in there. And what you don't think about either is that for a lot of homeless people, this is a space where they can go inside for 9 hours a day. A large portion of the court was homeless people who were looking for somewhere to be. Then you had people who were looking to agitate. You had, like you say, influencers. We had sort of the manosphere contingency who were there as well, who would come out and just sort of spout disinformation about the women who were testifying. And I can only say that it made me more determined to get it out and get it out on as many platforms as possible in the right way, because we had the podcast. We did all the BBC social media, iPlayer, YouTube. So we were supplying for lots and lots of different platforms. Nothing makes you more determined to get it right than standing next to 50 people who are just twisting and deliberately twisting what has been said, or just blatantly making stuff up. They're just chatting out their ass because they know that this is what's going to drive engagement. And you're watching it happen as well. You're watching their videos get millions of views. It made me resolve to do it. It made me clearer to get to the point when I was in court. The difficult thing was I was alone for 2 months. And have a team with me. I just went out by myself. We didn't know what it was going to be like. Staying safe is tricky in those environments because there were, you know, people getting violent, people who thought that this was a big issue around race, which we spoke about a lot, but then it turned into lots of sort of accusations being thrown around, people threatening to fight people. That was a tricky thing to navigate. But seriously, I got away with a lot just by being English and just saying, I'm English. And they'd be like, oh, okay. They'd be like, what do you think about this? I'd be like, I'm English. And they'd be like, oh, off you go. And I'm like, can't believe that worked. Apart from a few different people who thought I worked for a porn site and weren't aware that the BBC is news platform. What are you going to do? Comedy of errors, the whole bloody trial.
This is it. But it's interesting you talk about safety. You're there on your own. You haven't got a team. You're reporting back for the BBC News Channel. Let's talk about safety then. The safety of journalists on site. Did you feel vulnerable?
There were times that I felt like this is turning into something, this is getting ridiculous, this is getting out of hand. As the Diddy support grew throughout the trial, and if you listen to the final episode on Verdict Day, you know, they finished to rapturous applause. Most people who were there were supporting him by that point, and people were looking for a release because a lot of these people haven't court reported for 2 months at a go, and it's confined work, and they needed to do something at the end. So we had either people throwing baby oil on each other, people trying to start fights. And at that point, you felt like it was simmering and it was about to blow. So they did send in a lot of what I describe as riot police. I think they were like federal agents. So they were, you know, with the guns and the shields. They sent in a lot of people because they knew things were bubbling up in different places. On the first day that I was there, there was an Entertainment Tonight journalist who was quite badly just assaulted. A man came up to her, he'd filled like a sock full of rocks, and he was trying to hit her, and he was just screaming in her face like, shut up, bitch, nobody wants to be with your fucking saying bitch, like in her face. And I feel like because there was so much space for misogyny at the trial, a lot of the female journalists were getting it really badly. And there was definitely a kind of vibe that like Cassie in particular had pulled one over, like she got this $20 million settlement and she was just doing what bitches do. This is what they do. They say they want it and then they take it back to get your money. And a lot of that sort of anti-women sentiment kind of spilled over to the journalists. And I don't think any of us were really prepared for that. It was kind of a new thing for everybody.
Is there anything you have learned and taken away from that 2 months that you spent in the States and that feeling, the reaction to particularly female journalists, that you think, should I do that again? I would do whatever differently. What have you taken away from it?
I think that don't ever think that people are overhyping when they say that there is a properly applied effort to be misogynistic, to spread that kind of sentiment online, to rewrite what's going on. And in many ways, I was saying that, you know, I did a history degree. A lot of this was really writing into history what was going on, just accurately reporting it because there's no cameras in court. You know, we speak about the Andrew Tate of it all and what's been going on online for the past nearly 10 years now. Don't think that people are overhyping that. They're not overhyping that. It is here. It is dedicated. And a lot of these people don't even believe what they're saying. They're saying it because they know it drives engagement. So there were people who I was friendly with throughout the trial because we see each other every single day, eat lunch together. And then you hear them doing their content outside and you're like, oh my God, you're a liar. And I'm watching your video go viral later that day. Please don't anybody be under the idea that we're blowing out of proportion what's going on online. I'm watching like almost boots on the ground efforts to portray the women, or who we can call victims because they were deemed victims by the federal government, by the jury, to portray these victims as villains. And I watched that happen. Maybe I'd just go into it more aware of that's going to happen from day one. But I don't think I'd change any of the stuff that we did, the reporting. Probably put more stuff out if it's possible. We can find more hours in the day. You'd almost have to blitz every single platform with your content just to cut through the crap that's out there.
I've just stepped out of the courtroom and we have a verdict. It is not guilty for count one, racketeering with conspiracy. It is not guilty for count two, sex trafficking in relation to Cassie Ventura. It is guilty for count three, transportation to engage in prostitution in relation to Cassie Ventura. It is not guilty for count four, sex trafficking in relation to Jane. It is guilty for count five, transportation to engage in prostitution in relation to Jane. The reaction? Diddy kept his head down while the verdict was being read out, but after it was done, he dropped to his knees and started praying, hands on the chair in front of him with his head down, while his lawyers congratulated him and hugged each other. His children were smiling, and then at the end, they applauded in the courtroom and they applauded in the overflow rooms as well.
How do you adapt to reporting now when there is so much misinformation and noise surrounding a case like this? How do you cut through and deal with all this misinformation, these news influencers who are just basically, they're after clickbait, aren't they? They're after They're after numbers.
Yeah, and I think, and it's something I know that like certain generations of journalists or just different people don't love this fact. Being able to create content, and I use that saying, you know, I know that there's a, you know, we're not content creators, but being able to do stuff that travels on different platforms all at the same time helps. You've got to meet people where they're at, and that's where the people are at. They're getting their news from short form platforms. They're getting their news from whoever's out there and does it quickest in the most engaging way. You need to be present in those spaces. And we can't just rely on people navigating back to traditional sources of news like TV. We're aware of this. We know this. The BBC knows this. Every news platform knows this. This is why they're putting so much effort into their social media, into their podcasting. But it's being able to do the traditional hits on the Today program, doing 5 Live, doing the TV channel, but also being able to crank out 15 TikTok videos, and all of them have, you know, the same level of journalism in them. Your team turns into like a production house. You just have to. You're not going to reach people otherwise. It's not about, you know, doing TikTok dances in the corner. And I know that a lot of journalists feel like they're being forced to do stuff they don't want to do. And I hear that. But I was doing pretty much old school court reporting, and people were finding value in that. So we definitely have a place and a space to be on these apps doing hard traditional journalism. People want it. We just have to get it out there quickly and in as much of it as possible on as many different platforms.
There was a breaking news element to the podcast, and there is with Fame Under Fire. You would put out an extra episode that was maybe only 7-8 minutes long. It wasn't a full episode, but something had happened and the news had broken, and out would come another report. That seemed very fresh to me, quite different. You didn't wait until, oh, next week we'll do the next episode. It was bam, you were in there. That kind of mixture of live news and podcasting. Tell me more about that.
Well, that, I think I should really credit our commissioner with that, Rhianne Roberts, because when I pitched the podcast, we pitched 2 versions. And one I would say is a very typical way of doing it, and one is what she went for. One is like, how did we get here? Who is Diddy? Very kind of, you could hear many people in many rooms having that conversation. And she said to my senior news editor, Claire Fordham, who then made this happen with the team, you know, people are already in the space. They already know what's going on. You need to meet them exactly at the space and time that they're in right then and there, which is why they then funded and made space within everybody else's work schedules to create a podcast that could exist as breaking news, that could exist as legal analysis, that could exist as like a behind the scenes, because people are there. People are there. The news is coming directly into the palm of their hands. You have to be there as well. And you have to be there quickly and accurately. And so I think meshing all of those elements together, particularly with this case, because we saw such a high level of interest, it was just necessary. It just wouldn't have worked if we didn't do it. You can't be that trusted voice and say, we're here to tell you everything you need to know when you need to know it, if you're not.
Let's move on to Fame Under Fire. Was that planned, or did it happen organically as a result of the success of Diddy on Trump?
It got commissioned quite early into the trial, so they saw obviously the levels of interest. And then something which I think everybody wants to happen is people started asking for other cases. And as soon as you see that, and I think once you see audience demand, listener demand, and you're creating a community, which is what every podcast wants to do, then you need to do what people are asking you to do. I mean, I'm really happy that they did it. We wanted something similar. We didn't know exactly what format it was going to take. The celebrities are in no end of trouble, but I was really kind of worried about it being kind of fluffy, or what's the difference between this and E! Entertainment, etc. I think examining non-traditional like power figures, which is, you know, outside of your politicians or the people that the typical news would interrogate and scrutinize to this level, you're looking at people like we saw with Diddy, who was in control of a whole industry, who was setting working standards and practices, who was controlling people's salaries and job progression and creating jobs and taking jobs away. And other cases that we're looking at, like the Blake Lively case, we're looking at industry standards around sexual harassment, potential sexual harassment, what people are expected to do and show of themselves on set. When we're looking at the Candace Owens and the Macron's case, we're looking at this weird melding of news influencer, podcaster, right-wing influencer with heads of state that's turning into, you know, sprawling across so many different places. We need the scrutiny we need the level of journalism there that we have for politicians, that we have for those other court cases that are seen as more typical news, because these people are powerful and we fuel their power with our money and our interest and our attention. We should have a method to scrutinize them properly rather than like a quick sort of, oh, this is what's going on. Because when you look into it, you realize how many people are potentially impacted by this. So Fame Under Fire sits quite nicely in that space of being able to do that. I also think people got really into the legal side of it. I mean, the US judicial system provides no end of sort of entertainment. It's nuts. It's madness.
It was fascinating, though, that kind of deep dive into their legal system.
We're getting questions from listeners that sounds like, you know, they've just passed the bar. People were really, really getting into this. And we're like, why stop here? Why? I mean, in that many ways, you're looking at a really, because a lot of our listeners are from the US, a really litigious country, but with the majority of people not understanding how their own legal system works. So it was an accessible way to democratize the understanding of both the civil and the federal systems. I mean, Sean is just a delight, but it did that really well. So why stop with Diddy?
You mentioned Sean there, and I want you to ask about his role, because he's moved with you into the new podcast as well. He is great fun, so knowledgeable, but so flamboyant and so, like I say, so much fun. Where did you find him?
I found Sean on TikTok, which is madness. Well, Sean is allergic to technology. He's actually completely incapable, which is crazy that he's got so many followers. He was at home and he made this video about a very valid fear that people were having, that Diddy was being wrongfully persecuted because he's an African-American male and that he was being targeted. And we had other cases in the ether. This is clearly a racial issue. And Sean just went through in a video. He just pulled it up. You know, he doesn't script anything. Lord knows he doesn't script anything. He doesn't cut out any mistakes. He just recorded a video being himself, explaining the system of how they assign the level of severity of cases based on previous criminal history, based on how serious the alleged federal crime is. And he got 32 million views overnight. And then he just blew up. He didn't know what was going on. And then he just kept making videos. And I saw his first video. That's how I found him. And I assumed he was just like a TikToker. But he's not. He didn't have a clue what he was doing. People just loved the way he delivered the information. And for me, watching it at home, I felt entertained and informed. And as a producer, if you can entertain and inform me, you've hit the mother lode. Then I began the process of just stalking him. So before I contacted him, I want to know, skeletons in the closet, do you have any allegations against you? What have you done that's dodgy? This man is clean as a whistle. He owns his own practice. He's a criminal defense attorney. He's been practicing for like 30 years. He's one of the best criminal defense attorneys in the country, actually, specifically for closing arguments. I mean, it doesn't really get much better. But I was not going to have an expert on my show about Diddy and then find out 3 weeks later that, oh, this dodgy thing had happened. Because I've seen that happen time in memoriam, you know? And it's not necessarily producers' faults. They just haven't deep dived into every social media account and I did. And he was almost too good to be true, because we were like, are you sure he's real? Like, he's real. He's real. He is booked and busy and just a fantastic lawyer. And me watching other US lawyers just makes me appreciate how good Sean is. He's just so good. He's so smooth with it as well. He's an entertainer, he's a performer, but he's so knowledgeable. He's perfect.
Sean is wearing a suit where the pinstripes are made up of tiny versions of his own name. I just feel like it's my duty as a public service journalist to let you know that.
I'm a subtle guy. I'm subtle. I'm understated. It's, you know, it shows my humility. It's what I like.
How much did that set you back?
The gross national product of Peru, give or take. So it was 100% a stupid purchase, but that's why I wear it whenever I can.
The podcast is available on iPlayer and YouTube as well. Just tell me how important visualization of podcasting is now and reaching people across platforms.
If I think about a lot of the podcasts that I wouldn't even say listen to, I'd say watch, because typically I am watching them and I'm finding them through TikTok. I'll see them on my feed and then they will be visualized in a long form somewhere else. That is how a lot of people are navigating back to content. And if you want to engage listeners in a specific demographic, you have to do that. You're picking up different people in different places and the aim of the game is to gather as many people as possible. So like you say, existing in as many platforms as possible. I know it's a pain in the ass I know I'm sick of the cameras. I want to just put my hair in a bun and take my makeup off and sit in my Crocs. I do as well, okay? I also hate this, guys. Like, I hear you. I work with so many journalists who are just like, oh, I want to work on radio. Why is there a camera in my face? But you gots to do it. You just have to do it. You work on TV and radio now. You just got to just suck it up. It's not going anywhere. Figure out how to do short form content. It doesn't have to be 1 minute anymore. You know, my TikToks are 10 to 15 minutes long. They are deep dives into court cases. What you do is valuable on different platforms. You don't have to bend into a different shape to do it, but we have to do it. There's no way around it. And I know sometimes when you're up against it and you're trying to, like you say, drop a breaking news episode or get something out quickly, making four versions instead of one for you and your team is a pain in the ass. It's just not going anywhere. So yeah, put your pajamas on from the waist down and suck it up.
Finally, it's been lovely talking to you. Really great. Talk to me about the future of this type of breaking news podcast. Where do you want to take this?
For there's two things here. One, finding something that listeners want is just like it's gold dust. Just cling on to it. They clearly want the trials. They want to know what is going on inside these courtrooms, and they want to know it in many ways dispassionately. Accurately. I mean, that's music to our ears as journalists. You know, you're not just doing it for the sake of doing it. You're doing it because there are specific issues that they're centered around. For me, as soon as we did Fame Under Fire, I knew that we had to do the Macrons and Candace Owens. That's kind of the first time that's ever happened with a head of state suing a right-wing influencer and being willing to walk into a court in the US with everything that that means coming with it. Following those cases, to me, is also a way to get people who have been traditionally averse to journalism and to mainstream media and say, you know, this is the news that you care about. We're not telling you that this is silly and we're not going to cover it and we're not crediting this. We are here with you. We are unpacking. We are exploring. We're investigating. We're looking at the legal cases and we're going to be inside the courtroom. You care about it. We care about it. I think it's a really good way for people to become more au fait with what journalism is, who we are. You know, you heard a lot from me in the trial. This is my first trial. I am 24 years old. I've never done this before. And we did it together. And I was learning with Sean, with the audience. You know, this is why we're giving a right of reply. This is why I'm not giving my opinion. It's a really good way for people to feel like they have a connection to the journalism that's happening. If we can deliver more of that, happy days.
A big thank you to Anushka Mutanda Dawati, and you can find Diddy on Trial and Fame Under Fire on BBC Sounds. Keep an eye on our website, radioacademy.org, because we're asking for expressions of interest from members to become trustees of the Academy. 2026 is a huge year of change for us as we become the Audio Academy, and we're looking for people who want to be involved with this next exciting step. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the Radio Academy podcast wherever you get your pods so that you'll never miss an episode. And if you fancy giving us a review for Christmas, then that would be a great present. Thank you. I'll see you next week.